Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to the Mitchin. We are a weekly food podcast, kind of. Sometimes, most of the time, we're
sometimes.
A weekly.
Sometimes.
My name's
Levin. I think we've only missed one.
This era.
Still this week, bro.
It's very true. My name's Levins. My co-host, who you just heard, his incredible dulcet tones, Mitch Orr, is with me.
Hey, bro.
And today we have a very good friend of ours who we talked at length about last week.
Really?
Yeah, he's been on the podcast before. He's already forgotten that you need to talk into the microphone if you like to be heard. It's been a while.
Really?
You're so used to the LA lifestyle. You're used to that, the clip-on mics, yeah?
No, I'm just got it. I got surgically... up in my
oh, you've got, you've
top
got like
of my roof of my mouth.
A microphone that's like in your molar. Yeah, that's real, real clever. LA shit, man. Hollywood. That voice that you can hear right now through his mic'd up molar is Louis Tikaram, who is an expat.
International chef, I am now, actually.
Used to be based in Sydney and head chef of Longgrain for many years, but was stolen by the chance of fame and glory.
Poaching of the highest order, it was actually.
And now is head chef of EPLP in Los Angeles. Has been for about 18 months now. That seems about right.
2 years. It was 2 years in May, actually.
Well, no, you moved over there for 2 years. Oh, isn't you actually open 2 years ago?
Yeah, we had a second year anniversary in May. And in September, yeah, I'll be there 3 years.
That's wild. Because you were,
right.
Yeah. Because you were moved. You moved over there, and then you spent almost an entire year just kind of slowly getting the restaurant ready. Because
I was
of
working hard, yeah. 8 months,
getting paid to eat out every night.
I was working hard.
And now you are the toast of the town. You're the king of LA, right? That's what your tramp stamp says.
That's like when I come back to Australia. That's what it feels like. It's nice. You know, like who the fuck are you? When I come back, you're like, oh my God, it's Louis. I'm like, yay. People know me.
Whatever, bro. You've like gone from like just being a boy from Mullumbimby moving to LA to hanging out with all the pro skaters that you used to have posters of on your wall of and all this crazy shit.
That's nice. LA, yeah.
I hung out with you for 10 minutes the other day. Well, for a while, but within the first 10 minutes, you were showing me photos of Lil Jon and Usher eating at your restaurant.
Yeah.
And you put up videos of Drake filming a film clip on top of your rooftop.
Drake and YG came in. They were cool.
Living the life, boy.
Alchemist. He's like a regular. He comes in a lot.
That's so funny. So EPLP is like a, you know, a modern Thai, you know, your take on Southeast Asian cuisine, which is kind of lacking in LA.
It really kind of opened a lot of doors for me because I fell in love with Southeast Asian food when I started cooking, but really my true passion and what I, you know, grew up with is like South Pacific as well. So I was able to finally kind of put a few dishes in like homage to my grandma, like Kakonda and Nama, and now I've got a Fijian curry on the menu as well.
Unreal.
So it's been nice. I from working in several different places in Sydney, I didn't want to paint myself into that box of being Thai or Southeast Asian, or, you know, I made it very, very clear from the start in a country where kind of titles and labels are so important,
that I didn't want a title or a label for my food. I call it Modern Asian, and if it's tasty, it goes on the menu. And basically, that's the kind of the only drill. So,
and has that been well received by diners and press? Or
diners definitely, press not so much. They can't wrap their head around it. They're like. So it's fusion. I'm like, no fusion.
Don't say the F word.
And they're like, and I'm like, what? It's just like Asian. They don't understand that kind of, you know, that you can get, you know,
it can
like
just be a flavor profile.
It can be, yeah. And it's like I grew up in Fiji. I fell in love with Southeast Asian. I travel Southeast Asia, but I've also traveled, you know, and then lots of kind of. LA inspires the menu as well. Things I eat, Mexican, not necessarily I'm going completely down there, but you know, two things that really people in LA love is Mexican and Japanese. So, you know, like for instance, I kind of created a dish, elote, which is grilled corn. But with seaweed butter and tapioca crisp and tahine, which is they put on the fruit.
Yeah.
The
Mexican,
you know,
spice,
yeah. And it still fits into like Asian. But then, yeah, it's like got a lot of like LA influence in it as well. And it gets really well received. And when they're eating, they don't really kind of have to concentrate on what it is and where it's from too much. Yeah. They just enjoy it, you know, and that's kind of what the menu has kind of developed into.
So I thought on the episode today we could talk about your adventures in LA and even more recently your adventures in Vietnam, because you've just this morning gotten off the flight from a 4-day trip to Vietnam, a food research trip maybe. Mm-hmm. Then I want to talk about the restaurants that you miss the most, the ones that you hit up in the small amount of time you've had in Sydney, or the ones you had to go to, you couldn't miss, and why you missed them.
That's a very political conversation.
That's very political, yeah.
So we should maybe open with that then. also, you've got a pop-up kind of thing happening in Sydney this Sunday at the Dolphin.
Yes,
you're taking over. Takeover. The Tikaram Takeover.
Ticking it off the box.
And you're doing a bunch of dishes that you would do at EPLP kind of on the Dolphin's menu? Or?
Yeah, it's like in the wine room, I'm going to do some of our...
Kokoda pizza.
No, the pizza's actually... homage to Marty at Long Grain. So it's actually 5-spice pork hock pizza with pickled chili.
Sick.
In the wine room, yes, it's like things that are off the menu, the more snacky items.
Fuck, you ever put two menus together?
Three. Well, that was the thing. I met up with Monty at Iceberg, and he was being very nice. Burger and coffee, and I was like, something smells fishy here. And he's like, so we're just going to do the aperitivo 5 to 7. I was like, that sounds great. He goes, but it's a long weekend. I said, oh, good. So it'll be busy. He said, yeah, it'll be busy. I'm like, great. Why don't we do a full venue takeover?
Because Dolphin have been doing these little kind of 2-hour guest chef. They come in, they cook a few little snacks.
Yeah,
we'll have at the bar.
Guest wine importers.
Mike Benny
really.
cooked some Hungarian stuff there recently.
Gardy opened a few bottles of stuff on Sunday with Irish from Momofuku, and it's quite an eclectic mix of people.
Except you got to go. You got to do way more work than
everyone
else.
I got to do pub grub. So I'm doing a. Prince of the Pacific pork palm. So it's like, it's going to be rice, pork schnitzel, yellow curry, and pineapple pickle mustard green. So that's like my pub grub vibe.
Just a classic schnitty.
Yeah, classic. That's what we eat in Fiji, classic schnitties.
Chicken Express.
Chicken Express.
We all went to Fiji for Lou Dog's wedding years ago, and we're all staying in resorts, and everyone's bugging Louis like, where the fuck can we eat? Where can we eat? Louis like, Chicken Express is good in town.
I never said Chicken Express. I said Raj's.
Raj's. I think I ate there too. I think I enjoyed Chicken Express more.
That was that last day of Vietnam. I was just eating like bun cha, bun riu, all this like, you know, all like rice noodle. And I'm like, on the last day, I was like, fuck, I just feel like something that like Korean fried chicken or something like that, and I found it. So you could see there was no like pictures of food on the last day. Yeah, right. I was like, oh, yeah. Was, you know, those creature comforts, right?
So what were you doing in Vietnam?
I went, it's just, you know, LA is amazing, El Salvadorian, Peruvian, Mexican, Cuban, all the Bens, you know. the street food in LA is very good. Like we go to South Central, probably, you know, like where we visited to when you were last in LA.
We had tacos from a place that's a tire shop in the day, and then at night they put some tables out and cook tacos, and best tacos I've ever had in my life.
Oh yeah, I've done 3 months in Mexico. I went everywhere, Guadalajara, Oaxaca, you know, all the way over to the Yucatan, and some of the street tacos I've had in LA are definitely better better. I just think that, not that the meat's amazing in LA, but I think just the quality of produce and how busy they are as well.
Yeah.
And it's just such a cool community vibe. Like, it really reminded me of Southeast Asia, you know, like people aren't cooking at home. They're taking the whole family, eating. Remember like how cheap it was? We didn't even know because we don't understand, but we just held out money.
I tipped 10 bucks.
It. Yeah, yeah. No. Well, no. Normally you have to line up, but we'd Levin's tipped 10 bucks and then we had table service on that. We're like, just a couple more. Like, sure. It's like, everyone's like, what's going on here? Yeah. These guys. And we're like, oh, yeah, another round. Thanks, man. So like, you know, and just having that, it's amazing, but the Asian and the Southeast Asian is just, yeah, it's not like amazing.
Because they've got Korean and Japanese on lock.
Mm. Korean and Japanese, definitely. Yeah, and then the Southeast Asian, it's there, but there's just something different about being in Southeast Asia. It's just like my happy place. Like even if I'm not eating, I can just sit there and just watch, just listen.
The activity. And it's just like, and
so the smell of Vietnam as well.
And the climate as well, that humidity. Yeah.
And just everyone's like just happy and just doing their thing. And it's very inspiring, even if you're not eating, just to be there and the culture and, you know, everyone's sitting around
absorbs some energy,
coffee or drinking tea and, yeah, the energy. And, yeah, so it's been 3 years. My last trip was to Thailand, so I would come into Australia and I just saw some really cheap flights and I said, I just have to go back. And it was a good amount of time. Like, I flew in, did what I needed to do.
What, eat?
Eat, fly around on a scooter with no helmet on, near-death experiences, and then came home, you know? And it was just like...
Korean fried chicken, and then come home.
I feel like cleansed, so... It was a really good trip, actually, and I'm looking forward to getting back to LA and putting some of this now on the menu at EP, and kind of, it's a nice story, and now I think with social media it's great as well. People have seen me there. I come back, I put it on the menu, they come, they
eat. It's a bit of relatability.
Yeah, it's really cool, and I think that's kind of, I just think it's, I really appreciate that part of being a chef and cooking now. Mm. I think it's a really... it's a cool kind of story, and you can involve people in this story as well, which is nice.
When I went to Japan years and years ago, pre-Instagram, Facebook wasn't even like, it was pre-Twitter, I think, yeah. And we went to a restaurant in Takayama, and at that point it had been the most expensive restaurant I'd ever eaten out of my life. And it was pretty like down to earth, and the dude, the head chef was like, you know, we're like, oh, we think we want to have the fish. What's the fish tonight? And he went and he brought out a folder of him fishing, for all his photos with of him fishing. And then like he pointed out, that's the fish you're eating tonight. Number one, tasty fish. And then a photo of him with it on a line, this big orange fish.
No way.
And then, I love that, you know, kind of ties in that, you know, and it was because of that, the story behind all the food. We didn't really bulk at the price, which was, I think we spent like, you know, $100 on mushrooms cooked over coals and like things like that. But he backed that up with photos of him foraging for mushrooms. You know, it's just, real cool.
So his food cost was really good then.
Kodak dark room costed like through the roof.
Remember when you had to take the film into the thing, get it done.
Yeah. I spent years doing photography at that school, and I don't really use those skills at all anymore. It took me so long to get good at developing the film. And
that's crazy.
And now I'm like, it'll be something like, I sound like a crazy person when I tell my son that's something that I did when I was a kid. The fuck are you? You're not, dad's not making sense again, Mom.
What?
So what were some of the highlights of eating in Ho Chi Minh City?
I think definitely went to this like roll your own place. That's like,
what do you want, Pats?
Roll your own.
Yeah, sure. So LA accent, bro. I can't understand you.
So, like, I went to this really cool restaurant. Like, you can roll everything. You can pick and choose. That's my number one, like, fave. Like, Vietnamese, like, very fresh.
Fucking A.
You know? Mm. So, that's the one. So, it was just all, like, you could do the pork trotters. And they cook it and slice it. The chow tong, the shrimp mousse, grilled pork, and then this massive bowl of herbs, and you just sit there and you roll it and then you eat it with the rice paper. And then my second favorite was bun cha, which is northern Vietnamese grilled pork.
Impossible to find in Sydney, even though we have quite a good Vietnamese community. I've never found a decent bun cha.
Yeah, and because it's so simple.
Just the Angie's.
Yeah, totally. Talk to Hongi's mum if you want something. All these dishes done well.
Yeah, and I did some days in Cabramatta with her last week as well, just to get me like ready.
Prepped.
For like what to order and a few basic words and things like that, which really helped a lot when I was there.
It's the balance of like, you can eat all kinds of fried stuff in Vietnam, but because you're eating as many herbs as you are deep fried stuff, and then you walk into all the different destinations stuff. It's such a good healthy place to be.
Sweating.
Yeah, sweating out.
Sweating the oil straight back out your pores.
And I think one of the real highlights, which I didn't think I would have, was this breakfast spot. And it's Banh Mi Up La. So it's a baguette, but I think you can choose rice as well. But then it's like a hot skillet, two eggs, and then all the like assorted meat that you normally find in a banh mi on the egg, and you can kind of dip it and eat it or put it together. Or and that was a real there's a lot of spots are like traditional, but you can really tell when you find that one that hasn't changed in so many years. All the locals go there. It's only open like 7 till or 6 till 10 or something like that. So you know it's just like strictly business.
That's it. Yeah.
You know,
this is like what we do when we run
open,
out.
Open. Boom boom. Bam bam. Close. Locals know we're here.
Hair dryer on the coals. Like
exactly. Exactly. And then that's like so cool. Yeah, where it's kind of like. And that, it just that simplicity of life is like, that's what we do. That's all we're going to do. Yes, we could probably open till 11 and still be, but no, this is.
They'd be busy all day if they were open all
exactly,
day.
Exactly. That's what they that's could what do. And it's not found everywhere either. So it's almost like a sign of respect as well. It's like, these guys do it the best and we're just going to let them
do it.
You know, here it'd be like, hot chicken, eh?
Burgers, you say?
I see.
Mary's.
Salted caramel, you say?
Salt and pepper calamari.
Yuzu sorbet.
And so that's kind of like why I love it. It was excellent. It was so good. Like everything was, it was great. And it's like, why isn't this everywhere? But it's just
regulations. One of the best things about a majority of, you know, where all the street food hubs are in Southeast Asia is there almost, it feels like there's no rules. And then there clearly are, yeah. they're just a lot more lax on things that we've just, you know, had ingrained in our head. No, you must do it this way. Because if you do not, we'll find you money and shut you down. But it's just, that seems to just not exist.
But on the other side is, okay, you're doing that thing, we won't do that thing.
Of course.
And here it's, you're doing that, okay, we'll do that too, and we'll do that. And then 15 things all next to each other doing the same fucking thing.
Frozen yogurt.
Then it all goes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so fatty here, whereas that shit has been there for forever.
Yeah. Yeah, and like seeing, yeah, and people seem to take advantage as well of, like, this place is jammed every day, but it's still so cheap.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
So I'm talking under a dollar.
Yeah.
You know, and like,
you tip them
why wouldn't you do it like, why wouldn't you charge $1.50? No, you're going to be busy. Put it to $2 if you're the only one doing it, but no, just still, you know. And I do, I tip everyone. I feel like, you know, so I feel, and it's just so nice to be able to tip these people, and to, I work so hard for my money, and it's nice to give money to them, and
who are working so hard for their money as well.
It's like, fuck, you know, like, shit, this dude is like crazy. Does he know how much he just gave me? And it's just so nice to be able to do that, you know. So it's nice to kind of go there and pay it forward from, you know, I feel like I'm kind of like a Gwilo going there and taking their kind of inspiration and their culture and their flavors, and it's nice to be able to kind of return the favor by, you know, spreading the love.
And then putting all those spots up on your Instagram or whatever, and hopefully sending more tourists.
Well, yeah, for sure. Like, even people I met there, it's crazy. It's, oh, you been here? They're like, no, I never been. I'm like, but, you know, yeah, you need to. But I suppose there's so many restaurants and so many. Mm-hmm. Like, Google is just like impossible to use there. Like,
oh, man, I'm Google all Maps, like, especially. Off,
it's like.
Same as Thailand. It's just broken.
It's all broken, yeah. So it's like, and I'm like, I went to Mullumbimby High, so English is like, I still struggle with, like, another language. I'm like, Un Cha Tong Tang Sang Hub. 19. So I'm like, like, looking for this spot, like, for so long, like, going around and trying to remember it. So yeah, so that's, my days are spent wandering around aimlessly around.
Did the Uber scooter drivers know the spots though? Like, if I'm trying to go here,
I had to learn with the Uber scooter, it took me a day, is you had to, like, do landmarks,
right?
Because, like, the GPS just isn't, it's doesn't just do no bueno. Yeah. So you had to be like, find something that was close, that is pretty big, like a supermarket or a park. Yeah, exactly. And then Uber to there and then walk. Yes.
Right. Good tip. Hot tip.
I took me.
We used to print out the maps, and you mark everything on there, because the phone is like people are more likely to be able to look at the map.
Especially all that, they're pretty OG as well.
Is your blog post from when you and B went to Vietnam still up?
Yeah, if you go to yolevins.com/tag/Vietnam, I think is the URL. I've been giving it a lot. People
like, that's a good guide, that one too.
Yeah. It's very, there's a lot of jokes, and I'm like, why'd you make that joke? But, you know, I preserve them. I also don't know how to edit it, so it's in there forever. But I mean, I find it funny though that, like, you know, My experiences there were pretty entry level as far as finding destinations. Like, you know, we saw that new No Reservations episode, Bourdain and, like, one of his old bosses.
Yeah, he went to like the Mun Siao spot. Yeah.
And that was, like, for me, like, I think that's like the only really good episode of No Reservations. Mm. There's no bullshit meditative stuff, you know, where it's suddenly.
I actually tried to look for that when I was there because everyone was telling me I couldn't find it. But I did watch the Sydney one for the first time.
Oh, how's that?
It's terrible.
Where does he go?
Is it the one where Matt Moran takes him around? Yeah, it's not good.
So anyway,
we can make a video out of that clip. I find it funny though that these, you know, quite entry level. What I, you know, looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, I just, you know, I copied where Anthony Bourdain went, and then I kind of, we found, you know, random bloggers or whatever that we trusted and went to their spots, but like, they're still amazing restaurants that I think about all the time, like, incredible.
I know the ones that you walk past and you're like,
that could potentially be
totally
epic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, it is a pretty good guide. I did Ho Chi Minh City, Nha Trang, Hanoi, and Hoi An. If you're planning a holiday over that way, go check it out. Yourlevens.com, the website that doesn't get updated anymore. that was this week, but you have been in Australia.
8 hours ago.
Yeah. you've been back and forth from Sydney. I want to know, Lou Dog, what were the spots that you missed the most being in LA, and the, you know, which are the ones that you were on the plane over here going, I can't fucking wait to eat at this spot again. And obviously, I know Golden Century is like straight off the bat going to be one of them, but what, you know, everyone knows that. You can let us know what your go-to order at Golden Century is as well.
Crabs. Crab. So I can eat all the
really?
Claws.
Crab boy.
Anytime we ever go to Golden Century and have crab, literally in like the last 6 years, you will turn around, like the crab will get to the table and you won't even, like, the crab will hit the table and both the claws will be on Louis' plate.
I only like the claws.
Yeah, everyone only likes the claws. Yeah.
But Louis, like, before the waiters even bought it from the kitchen, like, the claws were on Louis' plate.
That's
somehow
amazing.
I got away with it for so many years. No one would know. And I'd be, oh, yeah, oh, how about that time of there? And then I'd get on the lazy season, I'd scoop it off and keep swinging it, you know? So then it's around there. And Clayton actually caught me out once, and then he doesn't let me forget. Now he's like, exposes me.
Really?
Everyone knows about it now.
Yeah. The claw stealer. Yeah. So how many claws did you steal on Saturday night before you come in halfway crooks? You guys did a big all-boys, all-chefs dinner at Golden Century.
Yeah, we got the A-team together, actually. It was pretty amazing. It all came together.
It was pretty funny. I mean, I was expecting you two and then Hongi to show up, and then I got Darren Robinson, Clayton from Automata. Who else did we get? We got Jordan Quitchy. Yeah. Everyone was there. Phil Wood was there. There's just all these people that I would not expect to see in a hip hop club. Although, actually, no, Clayton comes to Crooks.
Clayton loves it. Yeah. Clayton said at Crooks, he's like, you know why I really love coming here? Because I really hate this fucking music. He hates it, but he loves Crooks for some reason.
Yeah, but, you know, like, I don't love, like, Guns and Roses and stuff, but like when I listen to them, I can get into it.
Well, if you go to a club full of people that fucking love Guns and Roses and you're not necessarily a fan, you're like, oh, I see the appeal. Look how much these guys love it.
It is fun
to be around.
Cool.
Yeah. It's fun to be in a room full of people that love something that, that you're, you know.
Would you say the same about a J. Cole concert though?
Oh, I like
that. So, here's what's happened to me as a DJ in the last few years, Lou Dog. It's gotten fucking hard. I don't know if you've heard about it.
It seems hard, especially in the last few years with Serato and USB.
That shit's really very easy. I just mean as far as the promoting side of things. It's harder and harder to push like a regular, a good party.
Because I moved away. And then all of a sudden it got hard.
But I have to do like themed nights. And like, so you go like, oh, we'll do an all Kendrick party, we'll do an all Drake party, we'll do an all Beyonce party. And really you don't only play those artists, but it is like, that's the enticing thing. And it's kind of lame because you are like really just like, this is as basic as a party can get. Yeah. Come to it.
Hilltop Hoods.
And now everyone does that. And some people are way better at marketing to people than I am. So I've decided I'm tapping out of that game and I've sold out in a way. No one's going to know. I'm about to play a bunch of other people's tribute parties, but they sell out well in advance. So they don't even need to say which DJs are playing. And Mitch, you'll find great joy that I'm doing a Chance the Rapper versus J. Cole party next week. And J. Cole is my least favorite rapper in the fucking universe. I don't have any of his songs on my computer. And baby, you better believe I'm torrenting his entire back catalog.
Where is that at?
I'm not telling you. It's sold out anyway. I'll put you on the door. You should come. You should come and laugh at
me. We'll
be
there. What's happening tonight?
Yeah, what about this block party thing tonight?
Playing a block party.
Daddy's going to have some lemonades.
No, I'm driving tonight, bro. So, yeah, we'll have a lemonade.
So, we're going to Mamafuku for dinner tonight, back to the restaurants, but we want to come after.
Yeah, a block party. And then guess what happened after that? We're playing in Beach Road Hotel in Bondi.
After the block party?
Yeah, two gigs.
What time's Beach Road then?
We're doing like 12 till 1 or something.
So, what time's the block party? We probably won't even make it.
No, it's finishing at 12.
So just rehashing our schedule for the evening. Sorry, listeners.
Great, listeners love it.
We just had Portania.
They can go back in time and stalk you.
Yeah. Matt Moran wasn't there though.
So Ludog explained to me. I said, "Are you going to come to Acme this time?" He's like, "Nah, bro. I came last time. I ticked it off the box last time." So he's being very political and spreading Ludog around to everybody so no one can be upset. So if you missed out last time,
that's fair, because you
should get a visit.
Everyone
this time.
Fucking loves Ludog. Yeah. And I think you would have a lot of people like desperate for your time, but also for you to eat at their restaurant.
I'm pretty sure your Instagram is, "Hey, bro, come visit me. Hey, bro, come see us
there's
here."
There's definitely spots I want to hit. But yeah, you know, and I think that's. Oh, it's something I hold very close to my heart. My friends are always number one, you know. And
the problem is that 20 of them own restaurants.
So I did. So last time I visited Acme. Where else did I eat last time?
I don't remember.
I went to Mr. Wong. What else did I eat? No, I didn't eat at LP's because... The day before I left to LA, LP's opened. So I didn't go.
Did you do Automata last
time?
This
time. Automata, I went last time because it wasn't open. So this time I'm going to go to Momo, Fred's.
Uh-huh.
I haven't been to. Where else? LP's. I got to go back because I didn't go last time.
Wait, how many more days are you in town for?
Good luck, Pinburn.
He's already done a couple of
them. He's on our right show. Yeah.
Good luck, Pinburn. I'm going to have to do a Guaylo inspection. If there's white people cooking Chinese food, so I have to go and have a look. See if everything's in order. Long Chim, David's good friend. So I really want to... normally, I only get the pleasure of eating his food when I travel to Thailand. So yeah. Definitely somewhere I want to hit. And I think that's probably... I'd love to go and see Maddie at Esther. I haven't been since well before I left Sydney, so...
How many more days are you in here for?
I leave to Fiji on Monday.
You got a lot of eating ahead of you. You got a big weekend. Also, you have to cook for like at least one of those days, right? So, all right. How many meals are you going to eat tomorrow?
Three or four. Three.
Okay, all right. That's pretty normal.
That's stock standard.
Stock standard when you're traveling, chef.
Get back to LA. Get back on the up the runyon.
Up runyon.
You know?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Get back on that green juice.
So while you were in LA, you did a Chef's Night Out video.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes two of us at the table, yourself and Mitch. Both of you have filmed Chef's Night Out videos. This is a thing that Vice does. They're very popular.
Very popular, yeah.
And basically what it is the chef goes out, you know, hangs out with his boys, shows you around town, you go to the restaurants, and then they all get fucking blind. And Mitch, I think, had at least two drinks on his video, but he relied on his good friends to fucking...
I relied on Lukey Powell.
Luke Powell really, really went hard. And we think you may have gotten drunker than Luke Powell in your video.
I was pretty good, like...
You were fucked, bro. You were fucking wasted.
I don't
wasted.
Remember anything.
Yeah.
Do you have memory lapses of filming your one?
I, like, blacked out for ages.
That's amazing, because, like, yeah, I feel like whenever I've ever blacked out, no one's ever, have ever had a... You know, I think I've recorded a podcast once, but no one's ever ever filmed me. Was it insane watching you, like, zombie mode through a video?
Yeah. Well, they kind of... They were very kind to me. Normally,
in the edit.
In the edit. Normally, they don't mind...
showing a few green outs or
kind of dragging you over the coals, but they were very good to me. It was fun. It definitely, like, I don't know. I think you're concentrating so much on, like, what's going on and what's happening that I wasn't that drunk, and then I was like, oh, maybe I should be a little bit more drunk. You know, you want the show to be entertaining. And then the kind of wheels fell off, and I'm not sure what happened. And then I almost fucking cut off my fucking fingers.
Yeah, so it culminates in every episode culminates in the chef returning to their restaurant and cooking a meal for their friends.
It was so good.
You get back to EPLP.
They were so happy though, because normally that's like the ending scene. It's like, and then we went back to the restaurant, and everyone's there, and then we cooked, and then the credits come down.
Yeah.
But we got back to the restaurant, and I sent out a few texts and.
There was a pretty big crew there.
There was 60 people. And I think it's that kind of Aussie hospitality that was brought to LA, which I really miss a lot, and which I really love when I come back and come to Sydney. And like just then we had a Porteño, and it was just hugs and high fives and eating and everything is such a great sense of the hospitality community, and I'm really trying to bring that to LA.
Sure.
So with things like that, now birthdays, and I invite everyone, and I cook, and we do have beers, and just really trying to get people to meet people, and that was like exactly what it was, you know, that night. So everyone kind of shot out some texts. It was on a Sunday. Everyone turned up. I had a big suckling pig, and we did everything. And so, like, they were really surprised because we kind of came in that back door, and they didn't really prep the room or anything because it's normally pretty chill, and we do some food, and they like turned up, and everyone's just like, rah! And then they're like, get the second camera, and then the camera guys like came in like it was a riot, and everyone's like, they're filming, and everyone's got beers and bringing them in, and we're cooking. And yeah, so that's why the chef's not out. It normally it's like I think 12 to 15 minutes, I think it was like 25 minutes.
Yeah. And so the best part of that footage at the end is you chopping the suckling pig,
the
and the entire crew, like all 60 people in that restaurant, are looking at you like sweating because you are so hammered. Yeah, and just lifting the knife, the cleaver above your head, and then slamming it down really close to your
hand.
And
not looking either.
Looking at everybody. I do remember that part. And the producer came up, and she had just looked like. She white. Was white.
Bison would fucking love that. A chef cut off his hand in a chef's night out video.
Their insurance policies wouldn't like it though.
And she was like, I'm like, don't worry, I got this. And I was like cooking and shit's going everywhere, and I'm like serving it up, and yeah. And then one of my chefs, she's like, come, and she's pouring like, that's kind of when I got really, because I didn't even realize, yeah, but we had one guy brought a shot or in the kitchen, then she was pouring a shot in my mouth when I was cooking the pig, but I had it too quick, and then I was meant to shot with everyone else, so then she poured another one and put it with everyone.
Shots are no good. Shots are no
good. That was when it kind of
yeah,
very exciting. I got caught up in the
moment. Oh no, it's beautiful, and I hadn't seen that side of
that
you in a long fucking time. your wedding night is when I saw you that joke.
You reckon?
Really?
I think it's been before that. I think the Crooks boat cruise was maybe
when you were swinging off the rafters.
Yeah,
that was beautiful. I loved it. You remember every second of that though.
I remember that. I remember that one. That was funny.
How much of your wedding do you remember?
I remember a fair few.
Actually, I remember because one of the people that you have from the start in that video is a mutual friend of ours, Jason Stewart, a DJ of Them Jeans, who has a food podcast over in LA called The Stew, which you should check out. It's a great podcast. You been on it?
No.
The Stew?
Fucking asshole.
And actually, I think I introduced you to him when I was over there filming a video for Vice. That was for like a Visit Cali thing. Were you over there then, or was it shortly after that?
I think that was it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He was my co-host on that, and so he's kind of like your co-host on your Chef's Night Out video.
He was a host.
He was a host.
He's a good talker. So I was like, I was so tired. I had to like work brunch and do it. I'm like, I just need like two guys who can
talk shit,
who can talk, and then I was like, so I can just sit back, and it kind of didn't work because then I just got drunk.
Yeah. But I remember listening to this Stew ages ago, and this kind of goes back to your point about, you know, the makeup of what Asian food has made it to LA in a big way and what hasn't. But they said one of these guests was like, rank Asian cuisines from best to worst, and it was just like the five really obvious ones. It was like Chinese, Japanese, Thai, Vietnamese and Korean, and they go, okay, number one, Japanese, number two, Korean, number three, Chinese, number four, Thai, number five, Vietnamese. And I was like, that's literally the opposite of how I view those cuisines.
Yeah, yeah.
I get kind of, you know, Korean is everywhere in LA, and it's the thing that I wish that we had more of. In, you know, there is a good little pocket of it in Strathfield and
the burbs.
Not to the level that you can find, and also the level of like kind of appropriation and kind of modernization
and variety stuff,
as well, and
regionality maybe.
But yeah, like yeah, it's cool. Has it been kind of fun, kind of introducing people to the dishes that you kind of took for granted in Australia?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The dishes, but more so the ingredients. And all the Southeast Asian ingredients are like grown. Like
in Cali,
in LA, like on the outskirts of LA. It's hot, it's dry, there's plenty of land, and these ingredients thrive: turmeric, lemongrass, galangal, kaffir lime leaf. You know, this is just, there's an abundance of these ingredients, and this is what we should be using in LA. We shouldn't be using kale. This is a cold weather kind of high water usage, like produce to grow. You know, we should be using more Southeast Asian, Gai Lan, bok choy, you know. So it's really cool to be able to educate not only customers, but other chefs. Like other chefs will come. There's really great a Peruvian chef just opened across the road from us, Ricardo, and you know, he'd never seen Vietnamese mint, you know, and I'm like, oh, this, you know, and he's like, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
This flavor is, and man, where do you get them? I'm like, mate, it's like $2.50 a pound because no one uses it. No one uses it. I had to visit these farms and I'm like, I want lemongrass turmeric, you know, like, and they're like, okay, how much will you take? I'm like, I use like over probably, I use probably like close to 90 kilos of lemongrass a week, and they're like, 90 kilos, like, because that's their passion, that's what they want to grow. But so they're kind of Southeast Asian, they're mostly Filipino, the farmers, and their Southeast Asian kind of beds are this big, but then their lettuce and cavallonero and kale, and that's kind of what, that's the bread and butter, that's what they have to cook to be able to survive. And when I went and I'm like, yeah, I need this, they're just like, awesome, great, like this is what we wanted, that's what they want to be growing. So it's nice to be able to, you know, and there's such a health craze going on in LA now, and has always been, with like the superfoods and especially rhizomes and turmeric and things like that. And I put on a dish called Nam Ya, which is a very, very ancient Thai dish, and it's basically just wild ginger, galangal, turmeric and crab, and so it's like lemongrass, garlic and onion. So it's literally like seven superfoods.
Yep, and a crab.
And crab. Yeah. And like,
is that what it's called? Seven foods, seven superfoods and a crab.
And people are just like, this is like, turmeric's so good for you. I'm like, oh, no shit. Like, yeah, of course. It's, you know, like, this is a cuisine that's been, you know, around for so long, and it's so healthy. And if you visit Southeast Asia, you can really see there's like 80-year-old women like carrying fucking 100 kilos of fruit on their shoulders, you know, like. And so it's just nice to be able to expose like what LA has at its fingertips, like all the Mexican, like a case of limes is like $12, tamarind, chilies, mint, coriander, like it's all there. It's all there waiting to be used, you know. And so it's nice to be able to show the customers, yes, dishes, like you say, of like, oh, this is, you know, you eat it with your hands. It's, make sure you balance it, add some sauce and don't eat all at once and put some rice with the meat. But it's also like, this is galangal, this is Thai eggplant, this is, you know, sawtooth coriander. Mm-hmm. People to be eating something for the first time, that's like, where I find my greatest pleasure in some, converting someone.
Now, there are dishes that used to sell like hotcakes at Long Grain when you were working there that just don't sell, or vice versa in LA?
I suppose everything. It took a minute, really, for everything to start. You know, people were busy because we're in a really popular area and there was a lot of hype around the restaurant. And there's a kitchen bar. And when people, you know, they'd come to check out the restaurant and I'd come and sit up at the counter and order like the lamb neck or something like that. And it would come and I would just see their face and they'd just look at each other and be like, where the fuck have we come? Like, what are we doing? And then I'll explain, just tear the lamb off the bone, take an iceberg lettuce, that's Thai basil, Vietnamese mint, coriander, put it all in, add some of the chili jam, wrap it up, and then just eat it like kind of like a taco. And then like, oh, and then you'd see the guy kind of grab it and eat it, and this one guy literally pushed back his stool, stood up, and just finished the meal standing up. Like, he was just like, oh, and then like the fried rice came, and then the crispy skin chicken came, and he was like, and just to see that, like, is just nothing can, you know, can compare. And then to see him come back and bring in friends and things like that, and that's kind of, yeah, that's been the passion that's kept me going and kept me driving, you know. And so serving abalone and things that, where, oh, can we get the chef's menu, but we don't eat abalone.
Who doesn't eat abalone?
Have you tried abalone?
Yeah.
No. It's kind of like a scallop. Oh, yeah, cool, but hey, I don't want it. Try it. If you don't like it, I'll pay for it. And they try and they love it. And it's like, oh, it's really good. It's like, yeah, it's real. Just because you haven't heard of it or you've never tried it doesn't mean that you don't like it, you know. You try and give it a go, and that's kind of been the kind of baby steps we had to take at the start, but now we're kind of in full swing, which is great.
And I remember back in at Long Grain, you were actually quite ahead of the curve when it comes to a lot of things that are, you know, kind of seen as a nuisance these days. Like, your entire menu was gluten-free.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many years ago was that? 4 years ago?
That was a long time, yeah. So I didn't even really realize when we moved to LA, and I really say that I didn't find LA. LA really found me with the cuisine. And, you know, for instance, nama, which is we had at the wedding in Fiji, it's a fresh squeezed coconut cream, bit of lime, salt, a bit of shallot and chili, and then a beautiful nama, like a sea grape, which I get from Hawaii, which, you know, we used to buy at the supermarket in Fiji. And then that's in the coconut cream, and I send it out like that. And with such a huge Japanese influence,
so much sushi and sashimi and ceviches and things like that, but with so many vegetarians and vegans, I often wonder, like, what do all the veggies do when there's a big group and everyone's eating sushi and sashimi? What do they do? You go straight to agadashi tofu, you know? So to offer, like, a vegetarian-style ceviche has just been a huge hit. And this was kind of what I was talking about when we first started, where I didn't want to paint myself into that corner of being Southeast Asian or Thai. I wanted to be able to cook everything. And this was a dish I first learned how to cook with my grandmother, the number one. And to see that dish just so popular and having a really specific spot in like a in the dining scene is really, it's quite, yeah, quite an eye-opener. And then everything else, yeah, there's basically there's no gluten, no dairy, you know, except for a few desserts.
Can you do a chicken burger? Is there gluten in that?
Yeah, but that's upstairs.
Oh, okay. It's different.
That's LP.
LP.
That's drunk food. No one care. Even the gluten-free people don't care. It's like, oh, I don't, I'm gluten-free. Oh, you want chicken sandwich? Yeah, yeah, that's cool. I'll get that. When they get drunk, they eat gluten.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And exactly. When they're sober, they're allergic to gluten.
Even with like the raw food craze, I remember like my favorite dish that you used to do at Longgrain was like a roll your own betel leaf thing. And it was like a bunch of betel leaves and then like, it was like diced lime with the skin on.
Oh, you like
on.
The miyang. Yeah,
oh, that was
yeah,
so good. Upstairs. And then they had what was that? Like the raw peanuts.
Peanuts. And I had like a miyang, like coconut caramel sauce.
Echelots.
Echelots. Yeah, very like, that's a very deceiving dish as well. You look at it and you're like, what the fuck? Yeah, like yeah, it looks like a kind of a, like a bunch of prep.
Yeah, exactly.
Like chuck in the wok, right? But then, yeah, you combine it, mise en place, pepperiness from the betel leaf. And that's why I fell in love with Thai food. And yes, Vietnam was amazing and the flavors and everything is amazing. But that level of complexity and kind of intense flavors of Thai is just what really kind of made me fall in love with Southeast Asian.
You mentioned your grandma earlier. Has she been to eat at EPLV yet?
No, not yet. Not trying
yet. To get over there?
I want to try. Yeah, this time we're going to go to Fiji on Monday, and hopefully we can try and convince her to come and tee up a time that would be good for maybe the whole family to come.
I'm not a chef like you guys are. I had a restaurant for some small amount of time, and Mitch was the closest thing I had to training.
Book. You got a book?
Book as well. That's right. Two books, if you count the retitle. I don't know. No one
ever. There was a retitle?
Yeah, yeah. They renamed it Dude Food against all my wishes. No good, bro. But the only person in the world that has grilled me for prepping wrong is your grandma. Because when we were there for your wedding, everyone that came to your wedding helped in the prep for this massive feast that we had the day before your wedding at your parents' house, which is like a life highlight, one of the best meals that I had in my life, because everyone there contributed to it. You had like 50 of your friends, you know, we were all husking the coconuts or getting all the flesh out of the coconuts with some weird instrument that I've never seen since. And I got put on tarot duty.
Yeah.
And your grandma pointed me out.
I turned the other way. She was like, dead man walking.
She was like, everyone's doing a good job except him. He's cutting off too much of the flesh.
Too much of the meat.
And then, you know what, Grandma? No one ate all the fucking taro anyway. It was the only thing left at the feast. It was just shitloads of taro.
No one wanted to touch it after you got ripped. It was like, fuck, I'm steering clear of that stuff. I often tell that story. And yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah, she's still like that as well. Like, she just like, every time I cook in the kitchen, like I just did a food safari, and we shot how to make a kakonda, Fijian ceviche, and that was always my job when I got to my grandma's. I'd have to climb the coconut tree, get the coconuts, husk them, scrape them, make the milk, and then make this dish kakonda. So I've just done it with Maeve on food safari. So it's kind of nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to have that opportunity of moving to LA and then really sharing my story of food, you know, with the customers and the world, yeah.
Yeah, that night before your wedding, we also, is it Lovo?
Yeah, that was a lover.
Yeah, where you cooked all the meat and vegetable, the taro, in the ground with what you put on top, like
banana leaves and palms and with the river rocks, and then we covered it. And yeah, that was as you said, it was like probably one of the most kind of special days of my life, and just looking over that blue
digging that fucking hole.
Digging the hole.
Our mate Toby got a photo of me with my fucking butt crack out. Digging that hole. Put it on Instagram.
You and your old man arguing about how to dig the hole.
It's too deep. I'm like, fuck off, Dad.
Is that ever something that you try and, you know, do a version of at EPLP, like cooking in the ground?
I'd love to do something like that. I'd love to do something, you know. I'd love to go to, like, Food and Wine Pebble Beach and fucking dig a hole in the 18th green.
Just that 18th hole is just really big now.
Yeah, it'd be cool to be able to get a chance to to share some of that South Pacific kind of flavors. Something that even here in Australia, like Fiji's 4 hours away. Yeah. You know, it's nothing. Crazy, and there's not really any of that influence. So.
But that's because it's like, you know, when we had it, when we were there, it's actually quite difficult to eat all of those foods when you're in Fiji at restaurants. It's all home cooking.
Yeah.
So you need to know a family that's been doing it for years.
It's almost like a cuisine that's been forgotten, not only outside of Fiji, but also, you know, inside of Fiji.
And it's not just Fiji. A lot of islander cuisine is so hard to eat a good version of unless someone cooks it for you in their home.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's the age old, you know, it's, you know, I talked to like David Thompson, I talked to him about Thailand, and, you know, it's now some of the kids, they'd rather eat Subway and they'd rather, you know, in Ho Chi Minh, there's a KFC on like almost every corner, you know, and it's like all this amazing, and it's expensive as well. It's almost like Western price, and then there's all this amazing food around, but just this Western influence is really, you know, unfortunately Fiji, I don't think it had the population to kind of stand strong against like the tourism that came in such a huge wave, and yeah, all of a sudden just they, you know, they kind of caved in and
got a Chicken Express.
I lived in Fiji when the first McDonald's opened, and it was like, it was like Bieber fever. No joke.
And
no,
hilariously,
there was line. There was, I think these kids, I can remember, like I got off the bus and I was walking back to my ground, and these kids were holding the Happy Meal box like it was like, it was a time bomb, you know, like not shaking it and just, you know, I was like, oh shit, like it was a big deal.
You move from there to Mullumbimby and Byron, where that's like the only place in Australia that doesn't have a McDonald's.
Yeah, we like handcuffed ourselves to the...
you did?
Like treat you well, everyone.
Wow.
You know, like all down the main street, everyone protested and the whole town was out of action for a whole day. Everyone was chained to light posts and telegraph poles and in the middle of the road, and no one moved till there was
no Maccas,
and still to this day there's been no Maccas.
Maccas.
So all these
Subway now.
All these people, you know, moving to Byron, and all these kind of yuppies, you know.
You were there
we
first.
Paved the way.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's still Byron, because, you know, the Byron people, we tried to keep it that way.
Are you going to go back there while you're here, or no? Is that wasn't on the plan, this visit?
No, it's not. I think if I go back, I'm not going to want to leave, so I'm not tempting fate.
Yeah, I was just there a couple of weeks ago. While Mitch was in Mexico, I went to Mullum and ate Milk and Honey, that amazing pizza joint.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah,
they had some good meals. There was some great food up in Byron.
Well, that's the thing. When I left, you couldn't buy any kind of. Well, we had farm produce. Like I grew up on, like milk straight from the cow.
Yeah, and there still are places where you can just go and get milk that's come straight from the cow.
Yeah, so we used to on the way home from school, we'd stop at the farmer's house. His house was kind of set a fair bit back, but his garage was right on the street, and we used to slide open his roller door, and then there was a fridge in the back, with a margarine container on top of the fridge, and you just put the money open, and then you had a like a 2 liter bottle of fresh milk, and same with bananas and avocados, a bit of fruit here and there. But apart from those kind of old school farm, like real true farm kind of places, there wasn't really anything else. And it's crazy because it's like subtropical condition. Mm. It's perfect for growing. It's perfect. It's wet enough, but it's hot enough, and the humidity is good. And it was just crazy that you couldn't really find much else from that, you know. And now it's amazing. Like now there's the farmer's market is just
huge.
Blows your mind.
Yeah,
you know?
Great stuff there.
Really good subtropical produce. And the guys from Chat Thai, I know, now have a farm there as well. So it's really exciting to see. You know, we had to every month or, you know, month or two, we'll have to drive to Brisbane to go to Chinatown to pick up all our Asian ingredients.
Right.
So it would be a full day just to get everything. And because Dad obviously is, you know, Grandma was half Fijian, half Chinese. So we'd drive to Brisbane, stock up on bean curd and black beans and soy and oyster and bring it back. And yeah, and that was our kind of the lengths we had to go to for good food. Yeah. So now to see it like with good restaurants there.
Yeah.
Is like crazy. Yeah. It's amazing.
Awesome. Well, that about wraps it up. Lou Dog, thanks so much for coming into the Mitchin. We're going to ask you to pick a song to end the episode on. So think about that while I, or you don't have to sing it. You just have to wait, just go play it.
You can sing it.
What's
if you
worse,
want, bro.
The choice or me asking you to sing a song?
Singing it.
You can just choose a song. If you want to find The Mitchin online, you can find us online, facebook.com/TheMitchin, or send us an email to themitchinpodcast@gmail.com. You can find Mitch online at InstaKrill on Instagram, at Krillin on the Run on Twitter. I'm at LevDog, LevDawg on both. Louie can be found the_Lou_dog with 2 G's. Nailed it.
No, yeah,
us Instagram dogs have to stick together. And if you were ever in LA, make sure you head to EPLP. And if you're in Sydney this weekend, head to the Dolphin on Sunday
from 5 p.m.
From 5.
Make sure you eat all three of Louis' menus.
And don't bug me.
No, are you cooking too, or are you just making?
Well, I don't know.
Like, Monty, get back to Lou Dog. Lou Dog, thanks so much for joining us. Have you thought of a song?
Rampage.
Which one?
EPMD.
Okay.
Is that good?
Yeah, that's a great one. We went to Thievery in Glebe last week, and I swear they just put on a Lou Dog playlist. Cause
I know. I was like,
well, there was no Rakim.
There was no Rakim, but it was all pretty close.
You moved to the wrong coast. That's the one thing I will say, because you are very much all your favorite rap is New York rap.
I know, but kind of the new hip hop. I think it's kind
you like
of
like the new LA stuff.
Yeah, YG I do. And, like yeah. I've been a little bit converted, and I think maybe yes, I think it would have been like old Lou Dog, probably would have had to live in New York, but Lou New Dog, I think LA is kind of.
You should check out the new RJ album. Both of you would really love it. He has to call himself RJ Mr. LA now, so it's all one word. So RJMRLA. But there's a song on it. It's like an incredible, like all TJ Mustard production throwback LA gangster rap record. And then he even does like his own version of Gin and Juice, and it's so fucking good. Just having the familiarity of those synths in the background.
And the DJ Quick tape.
Oh
DJ
God.
Quick and Problem Tape
Bro,
is
that's
really
one of the best
too.
Albums of the year. And that's like a re-release of a thing that came out last year, but they've expanded it. And that's such a good throwback to like what LA rap used to be to what it is now. Like you can hear both and all the eras in between on that. It's real good stuff. Anyway, EPMD from New York. Why Rampage?
Anywho. I just think that's really the... why I fell in love with rap more based around the story they're telling throughout the song, and like you can really listen.
Oh, like how you tell a story through your food, they tell a story through their music.
Exactly.
You just say you are in EPMD now.
Well, basically, yeah.
Louis, thanks so much for joining us again. We look forward to having you back when you're next in Australia.
Or over the phone.
Over the phone.
Oh, we need to set up that Skype shit.
You want to do the 1 minute? 1 minute with us?
No.
See you next time, everybody.
Bye, guys. Bye-bye. Thank you.
baby. Slow down, baby. Yeah. Slow down, baby.
Yeah, LL Cool J. Slow down, baby. EPMD and Flex, snapping next, cashing large checks. All the non-believers can coach it together. Slow down, baby. Cause this is Daddy Mac, king of the Bozak. All my friends know that. Mix the master down to the as I kick it like this. Slow down, baby. You could get rugged, tough, hard like P. Try to play my man, but you couldn't touch me. You no comp rapper on a quest. To get your head flown, boy, you must be looking Seth. Cause many off and wonder is MD paid. You got damn right, punk, stay out of my way. Cause I clock G's while you clock Z's. And I don't smoke crack, I smoke MC's. So pick up a pen, cop a squat and take notes. My rapper suffer from bleeding sprains and slit throats. Cause my style, deadly psychopath, schizophrenic. The rapper choke like a carburetor, freeze up a panic. Cause I clock pesos, don't say yay, yo. Another word for cocaine, mi amigo. That's Spanish, terminology for friend. Now sit back and rob my Bozak as I sin.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.